when we broke, Mr. Sharp was about to begin a comment, so Lee, why don't we begin the last hour with your comment?
Okay. Like earlier, we were discussing the function of community and regional affairs. I was about to defend and also throw a couple darts at it, but when community and regional affairs, or actually at that time it was local affairs agency, came into being, it was, I think, substantially understaffed. They just had the Mandatory Borough Act thrown into their laps. There was this new animal that had been cast upon our countryside. Everybody was scurrying about, wondering what it was, how do we form, how do we get out of it, and we need somebody to turn to give us some sort of advice. Those who are trying to be constructive about it needed some sort of guidance. And this burden fell entirely to the local affairs agency. And there were one or two people running around the countryside trying to instruct people, trying to give them guidance. And for the first several years of the life of local affairs, I know they concentrated almost entirely on boroughs. In fact, I recall, I think it was the 1966 Alaska Municipal League Convention here in Fairbanks, that somebody from one of the cities stood up at a business meeting and introduced a resolution to the governor, respectfully requesting that he direct local affairs give equal time to cities, because they had been dealing almost exclusively with boroughs. I think now we do have boroughs well underway. They're mature enough, they know what they're doing, and they still have some problems, but now it is time to turn to the rural area. However, I've noticed, I think, I don't know how distorted my view is, but it seems to me that community regional affairs has now become something of a clearinghouse for state funding and federal funding that goes to local municipalities. It seems to me that a great deal of their time is probably taken up in grant administration, really not a lot of it being provided in terms of basic municipal research and assistance, such as I know other local affair type agencies in other states perform. But then again, this may very well be a continued function of their understaffing. The legislature has passed a number of grant programs on them for the minister, and they are now looking at the next area of real need, which would be the rural community. As far as a slight comment on the on unification, the city of Borough of Juneau was the first municipality to unify. I had the opportunity of being on the assembly when we were really scrapping with the city for our new powers and with the school board. And then I left the city for a while to get my education. And I came back. I left just as the unification move was getting underway. We just gotten the first unification bill through the legislature, which authorized first-class boroughs to unify with the cities they're in. Had to be that way because we're the only first-class borough in the state, and there were other boroughs around the state for second class that were afraid that bad things might happen if it went through any borough to unify. So the first one went through first-class borough. And they were just getting going when I left, and I had the opportunity while I was in law school to come back for one summer right after they unified. And I was really amazed they had a at the difference in the way they were solving local problems. As Ben mentioned, there was no longer, the problems were no longer cast in terms of borough and city problems. It was our problem. We had a really high quality assembly, and any reference to a specific area about making sure that my area gets its just desserts, its fair share, is even made in jest. So there continued to be a recognition of the interests in various areas, but it was just totally different. There was no longer the waste of political energy in fighting, because there was no longer the forum for that scrap. Things aren't all love and kisses between the city and borough and school system. However, I don't think we really have any substantial problems in that area right now. Other than the fact that we probably don't give them all the money that they ask for. Unification, I think, is an excellent form of government for areas, such as those in Anchorage, Sitka, Ketchikan, probably. Any other area where you have a large, relatively large city that dominates the area, and a fairly cohesive urban area around it. You had a number of cities which were small but equal power. You might have problems, but there again, it might also work. I just don't think we've tried it in one of those, such as Matt City. But all I can say is unification worked wonderfully well in Juneau. It's worked because we've got a great local government section on service areas.
Thank you, Lee. This finishes the presentations of members of the workshop panel. We'd like to get into a dialogue with all of you and all of us at this time. But first, Mr. Bida has asked to make a comment, and I'd like to invite him to do so.
Thank you. My principal reason for asking you to do the commission do this is a matter of conscience. I've been, enjoyed very much hearing all the nice things that you and others around here have been saying about me and my alleged services to the committee and the convention. I don't think we ought to forget that I was the second consultant to the local government committee. I was preceded by Weldon Cooper of the University of Virginia. And that when I got here in Fairbanks, the basic pattern of the local government article had been pretty well established. The principle that something like the Fordham approach to home rule was to be included was certainly had been pinned down. And this and the idea of city county or city borough relationships had also been laid down, partly because Weldon Cooper had been a member of the group at the University of Alabama Bureau of Public Administration years before, which had developed a scheme for the consolidation of Birmingham and Jefferson County. And he also was aware of the East Baton Rouge Parish, city parish consolidation in Louisiana. And the city-borough relationship, which was written into the Constitution here, had some similarity to those. Well, okay. Weldon is a very good friend of mine, a great guy, and he needs to go down in history as having really worked with the committee to the point of getting most of the basic principles down. Now, what I did was simply to listen to the committee and try to make sure that it really thought through all the questions as thoroughly as possible, and that what they wanted to do was expressed as clearly as possible, and that it really did fit the needs of Alaska. Now, frankly, when I got up here 2 or 3 years later to do a study of how you're going to apply the Constitution in developing local institutions in Alaska, for the first time, I got around over the whole territory. I didn't get anywhere except Fairbanks the first time I was here until after the convention was over. And this is why I really bored the committee stiff by sitting around with them for 2 or 3 days and asking so many questions. I thought, well, this fellow is just a filibuster. If I'd had a chance to get around before, I wouldn't have been quite so sure about this city-borough arrangement. Because I came to the conclusion then, that is, as Mildred Herman has said, there were relatively few places in Alaska that needed both the city and a borough any more than a hog needs a side pocket. So this is what I recommended in that report. Now I'm delighted that you're coming around to the same solution by a circuitous route, and it may be a better route than the more direct one that I suggested. At any rate, that one didn't prove to be politically feasible. So I'm tremendously pleased at what has happened in this direction. Now, as to the question of home rule powers, I think Mr. Sharp and I really are in basic agreement. And it sounds, and I'm optimistic from what he says, what I've heard here, that Alaska, the courts are going to be educated, and that you will arrive at a pretty satisfactory and viable
interpretation of that home rule provision, which I am sure will be helpful in other parts of the country. In New York State, the home rule provision has been practically destroyed, not for the legislature, but for the courts, that set up the doctrine of state concern as a bar against lots of intensive local action. I think we need to avoid that. The state concern must be expressed with absolute clarity in a state act intended to apply generally throughout the state that can't possibly be reconciled with some part of a local law, it seems to me. Now, on the Department of Local Affairs, I'm delighted, of course, at what has been happening in the last couple of years. I still think, from what I've heard, I haven't checked into this enough, that it would be very desirable of the department to provide more technical assistance, technical services to local governments, especially small rural areas. When I was here the second time, I talked with a lot of officials from small cities who said they were being ripped off by the Seattle bond attorneys and were paying more than they should to borrow money. Well, Paul Hildesacker was the first head of the Department of Community Affairs in New Jersey. He got a very smart young city manager in to head a section in the department. And they saved, and I forgot the figure, but they saved millions of dollars over a few years in the cost of local borrowing by relatively small municipalities that simply couldn't afford their own talent. And they were at the mercy of the bond attorneys. So I hope you can get further into that. Thank you. I'm awfully glad to have been here, and I appreciate this opportunity to correct the record, especially in favor of my friend, Ron Cook.
Thank you, Mr. But I'd like to just comment briefly. I think we're at a point in the discussion where the fundamental question is, has the local government article worked? It seems to me that in the implementation, that the number of recommendations that have been made here, a number of the comments that have been made here, lead to the question that I just posed. And I think that essentially breaks down along urban-rural issues. I had the opportunity this morning to spend some time briefly in the judiciary workshop, and a lot of the agony about the delivery of judicial services to the rural areas, I think can be translated into problems that affect the delivery of local government services to the rural areas. Frankly, while I think that the local government mechanism that exists at the present time is sufficient and flexible enough to meet all local government needs in our state, I think that fundamentally it becomes a problem of bucks, and that a structure without the financial resources to allow local people to effectuate programs and provide services that are necessary is going to remain essentially unused, regardless of how good the framework might be. And I think that with respect to rural areas is the issue that we face right now. Certainly, of course, in order to utilize any structure, there's got to be a reason. And in a lot of areas of the state, up until very recent years, there was not a huge desire to assume at the local level a lot of functions that are normally the responsibility of local government. That lack of desire certainly came from resulted from a variety of sources. That is changing very rapidly. And I think one of the huge emphases for the creation of the Department of Community and Regional Affairs is the recognition of the legislative and executive level that something had to be done. And I think that task still remains before us. I don't think it has anything fundamentally to do with the legislative with the local government article itself. a very broad, generalized statement about the philosophy of local government in our state, but it had to do with the implementation and the matter of priorities that the Alaskan public place in the legislative forum. With that, I'd like to invite comments or questions by any member of the panel or any member in the audience. John, Mr. Havelock?
Thank you. I'm John Havelock. What I have to say will maybe sharpen some of the things that Mr. Malott has said that concern me about how this particular article of our Constitution has functioned. I was happy to hear Mr. Hubaugh disclaim responsibility for writing the article, since, in my view, with 2020 hindsight, I think that this article is a disaster area. And in fact, only the reapportionment article of the Constitution has been left in a worse state of shambles by 20 years of experience. And the reasons I think so have to do partly with something, with sort of following up with something Mr. Sharp said, which was he noted that there's no name for a unified borough city. And if you follow that a little further, I think you see that one of the basic problems that was not addressed by this committee of the Constitutional Convention was what the distinction was between a borough and a city. That is, the conceptual thinking translated into any kind of a legally expressed framework in constitutional law for the distinction between the two entities is non-existent. People talked about a borough as being a regional government, but it never got, and the city presumably as being some sort of a local government, but it never got translated into any language. And that confusion was compounded by legislative response over the next several years. So an enormous amount of energy in the local government is seen, in my view, in the last two decades, has gone into combat, unnecessary combat caused by the structure of the article between boroughs and cities, and between rural and urban interests. A part of the irony of it is, as far as it's a human failure that would have happened anyway. If you look at the composition of the committee, I would say that if ever the best and the brightest were working on one committee, it was in the local government committee. There were a lot of the very able people were working there, and I don't fault the quality that went in, but I would say with 2020 hindsight that they spent a vast amount of time talking about whether they should call it a borough or a canton or a county or whatever, and spent very little time thinking about what local government was about and what the difference between a borough and a city might be. They handicapped the formation of local government with this requirement that no doubt seemed very good at the time, that Ben Marsh referred to, that a member of city council should sit on the borough assembly. And that just sort of provided a very special forum for these kind of conflicts to work out. And borough government started off with a bad name as a result of the internal wrangling that went on within every borough assembly that had a city in it, from the city representatives sitting there, who were addressing institutional interests that they were there to represent of the city government, not people interests. Specific provision that helped cause considerable problem is the one that was referred to here, that a new service area may not be established if it could be done by annexation to a city or a whole bunch of other ways. There's no clear understanding to this day legally as to what on earth that sentence means as a legal proposition. What can, you know, when does a borough have the authority to set up a service area when there's some kind of a city in the vicinity? A part of the problem, and I was talking, I guess, with Mr. Dugan about this out in the hall. Evidently, the constitutional provision failed to give adequate expression to the mandate that the entire state be divided into boroughs, organized and unorganized. And I think a lot of, you know, the agony that went through on the Mandatory Borough Act, which I think was a necessary act that you know, obviously left great wounds and did very great damage to the formation of regional government, would have been avoided if that constitutional mandate had been clear. Although I'll admit, you know, if I'd been there, I probably would have thought that it was clear in the language there expressed. But no one has, it's never been implemented. I see nothing really in the local government article that reflects the special concerns and interests of Alaska's rural people. And I'm not sure why that is. I suppose at the time, of course, the native people of Alaska were very much a submerged minority in the state's political makeup. There was only one Alaska Native at the convention, as I recall, Frank Bratrovich, who was the only delegate. And I think that helped to, some mention was made of paranoia here, and I think that helped feed the paranoia that is the establishment of this local government article, and that local government from a perspective of Native people was something that was imposed by the dominant culture and was a way by which white men would get to have their way economically and politically with Native people. And I think that's, you know, one of the reasons I account for why, despite a variety of major incentives, that even today, Mr. Harper is working on developing programs for establishing boroughs in the unorganized borough, and still has a tremendous problem with receptivity. It's only a few people. I think that Mayor Hobson, with his experience in state government and his superior perception of how you could use these kind of tools, resulted in him leading the North Slope Borough movement into utilizing this form of government to its maximum. And but even with that leadership, there's still a lot of hanging back. So I think the last comment that I would have is that Mr. Harper, in talking about how you might go about funding it, seems to me address the situation the last 20 years instead of the next 20 years, and he says, how we set up these units and what kind of new taxes should we impose, income taxes or new on natural resources, special taxes. And I would suggest that the answer to how you go about funding in the next 20 years is really we're moving into a major, or should be moving into a major revenue sharing phase of state governmental organization. That is, we are no longer, should we have to tax the individual Alaskan until his pockets are hanging out in order to fund local government when the natural resources of this state are sufficient to provide that through direct revenue sharing. And I would suggest one of the biggest dangers to this movement now is the provision which is on the ballot this November, which would dedicate a very large portion of new state revenue to the development bank community, rather than, and thereby making it unavailable to local government. Seems to me before we start financing development banks through setting up dedicated funds which have to be invested in income-producing investments, that we should think about all these needs of local government, that local government provides, which are not met, and which should be met, in my opinion, before we go into that kind of an activity. I'll admit I'm speaking somewhat tongue-in-cheek because I thought it's been entirely too peaceful here, and I thought I better say something adverse to liven things up and get people mad.
Bart, Ben, John, could I, Mr. Havelock, could I wonder why it is that you left out something that seems to me to be perhaps most important, and I've always wondered whether the framers of the local government section didn't intend it that way, but the exclusivity of power, the fact that one agency, the borough can't exercise area-wide power unless it's denied to the city, that one factor set up an irreconcilable conflict, which I wonder if was it actually intended, if that was intentional on the part of the framers, because fortuitously enough, it's the one thing that forced unification. And if unification is the answer, then we can probably thank that particular provision. And, you know, maybe we can apply that to all local government situations and say you can't solve the problem until you create a solution that can that cries for a solution and has to be solved that way.
Well, my recollection in the minute is they didn't. That's what Byron commented on. There's some built-in irreconcilable differences are built into that article, and they were not discussed that much.
And weren't. You mean they were unintentional?
That's my belief, yeah. Not as to putting them in there, but it was not intended that you'd end up in a sort of combative situation. They thought they were making peace, not war.
Oh, I see.
Mr. Rombo?
I think if you go back to discussion during the convention, I doubt if you'd have a lot of the committee discussion on record.
Sure.
Yeah, it's more of it would be in the plenary session. Right. And as I recall, I think there was considerable discussion along that line, and I think it was in defense of the people living outside of the cities that this was set up, which of course became the abrasive thing that no doubt brought about your unification. And had we been able to foresee unification as a solution, it would have been in there, I'm sure. And then, of course, your hindsight comes in now on this. I guess the remarks I'd like to make are for particularly those who may be students here and hoping to benefit from all of this review. A friend of mine commented when I told him I was coming up here this weekend, he said, "You better not." He said, "They'll probably hang you." And that's why I was glad when you opened up on a few remarks, because it was a little bit peaceful here, I guess, on this. I was thinking of Mr. Marsh's comments on each borough being so vastly different. And I think as I look back now, this is one of the things that made it such an awesome job, is to try to write something that would fit the southeastern Alaska Anchorage area, the North Slope, the Unalakleet, or the Nome area, and it just really seemed like an impossible task. And I suppose this is one of the reasons that you do find in the article at least 14 or 15 times as provided by law or not prohibited by law. Maybe that not prohibited was a bad thing, because that gives power unless the legislature decides to pull it back, whereas if it were just provided by law, the power would only be there if they would act. But I think this idea of not prohibited by law was to give local government some power in the light of having such a strong executive branch in the Constitution. So this was to provide the smaller communities, wherever they might be, with built-in power, unless the legislature should decide to divide it up and even it up. I don't want to take any more time, but I just want to mention one thing, that if And now that unification seems to be an answer, and I want to find out a little more before I leave how that works, because this is good that a solution has come out of all of this. But if there is a need for a name for this unified body, maybe all of the time spent arguing about a name is not in vain. Just go back and look over that great big long list. You've got names to select from. They're right there. You just flip a coin and you have a name for the new bodies.
Well, I think there's a great deal of misconception first about how much time was spent on the naming the borough. In the first place, the committee's mind was pretty well made up on borough within a reasonably short time as the best possible name that it could put forth. It didn't have the connotation of counties, and it didn't have a great many other connotations, parishes, and so on. But the problem of the name surfaced and appeared to float around a great deal because of one of the delegates by the name of Frank Barr. He just did not like the name Borough. And he'd be damned if he was going to have it called Borough if there was any possible way for him to change it. And having been a former legislator, and learning some of the wiles of Robert's Rules of Order, so on, he propounded every time he'd get beat, he'd come up with a new suggestion about changing the name, and it finally evolved itself into, as I recall, it was some sort of a contest, and they finally listed all of the names, and I have a copy of that list someplace, I don't know where. But it's a tremendously long list, and I think that, I'm not sure, but it seems to me that there was a vote on a big menu of the name before the borough was finally settled as the name for the level of government that would be neither state nor city. However, there's been too much. There wasn't as much time spent on it as it appeared.
Yeah, but I think the little thing for that particular session was the name problem.
That's right.
Jim, you'll recall the very next day after Frank lost that issue, he said, you know, you just made a mess out of the whole state for that
last. To get on here, what is a unified local government? Is it borough or is it city? That question has been answered several times in different ways by different people. The former city and later borough attorney of Juneau, Barry, I believe his name was, after the city and borough of Juneau unified, and the city of Juneau and Douglas and the borough unified, I was under the assumption that they had disbanded the boundaries of Douglas and disbanded the boundaries of Juneau, and that the whole area was one local government unit. However, I find that because of two or three opinions that he rendered to the assembly at the time, that the boundaries of Juneau maintained themselves and the boundaries of Douglas maintained themselves, and the powers that each had, even though they didn't have a governing body, they maintained themselves. And one of the areas was police power. Even though they unified, the police force agencies of either Douglas or Juneau never transgressed beyond their former boundaries, and the hinterlands of the borough, so to speak, were still being policed by the territorial police. The same thing would happened in the in the area of Sitka, where Sitka and the borough unified. In many of the local and many of the state agencies, they were sore put to try and get the assemblies of those areas to understand that, as far as state law was concerned, they looked on the unification as a borough, not a city, that when they unified and became a borough, and they did not become, or they lost their powers of being a city. One of the areas was in the alcohol beverage control laws, the granting of alcohol beverage licenses within cities and without the boundaries of the city in larger areas, boroughs, and so on, were different. And finally, because of some controversies that emerged, somebody, a local affairs agency or somebody in general, maybe the Attorney General's office, finally had to tell the city of Virginia that they would have to operate under the rural concept of local government, and they told the Greater Sitka Bureau the same thing, and that seemed to end their power.
Then we amended the
constitution. Well, is that what it was? Anyhow, the problem with it, as I will say this for the Greater Sitka Borough and for the general borough, their unifications, I consider them to have been quite successful, and they've eliminated a great many of the pains and transitional problems that have beleaguered, for instance, the anchors and the city anchors and the borough anchors. Unification problem. The question has been asked, why cities? Mr. Fisher asked, why were home rule powers designated to cities and to boroughs? Well, I think it's evident that the local government committee, in considering this at the time, also considered that there would be areas where there would be boroughs within cities, and that there would, or cities within boroughs, and that there would be areas where there would be cities with no borough or any organized borough, wanting to give cities in their right to exercise their powers, all the powers that they needed. They granted them the right to have home rule powers if they wanted to, and Maynard can correct me on this, but I think it was even conceived that there could be a home rule city completely ringed by a home rule borough, and the two could function compatibly together. I think the one thing that was overlooked by the local government committee, and of course, as John says, 20/20 hindsight is a lot better than looking at it from the face. I think the thing that was overlooked is probably some of the selfish conflicts, and that's the only way I can explain it, for the power struggles that would develop because of the local government article. I think the local government committee kind of took a philosophical look and said, well, we're sure that the people, when they decide that they're going to develop a borough and put all of the powers of government within the borough, will phase out the city over a period of time, and there shouldn't be any problem. Maybe 20 years is too short a time to look at that in reflection and make any decision as to whether it has worked or whether it hasn't. Certainly, I know that I didn't, and I'm sure some of the others didn't realize to what extent there would be conflicts and power struggles to develop in trying to unify. That's the reason that John stated the question that did leave, that the cities and boroughs can both have the same powers. One of the things that, and I criticized the legislature and succeeding legislature considerably for this, the local government committee vision that once this territory became a state and local government, the Constitution would become an effect, that the legislators would jump into this business of local government and really do something with it. It seemed to be a crying need. Even then, as you hear now, Native leaders, there weren't as many of them, and they weren't maybe as loud, maybe they weren't listened to as much, but they were there. They were complaining then, for instance, why the students from the villages had to leave home. and go to faraway places, Mount Edgecombe, Chumawa, places to get not only high school education, but an upper level grade school education. And so that was considered, along with many of the other problems of the volition, trying to develop this article, and it was just unbelievable that the state legislature wouldn't get into this business and get it settled. Jack Coghill is a member of the legislature, the first legislature after statehood, when the first borough was organized, tried to prevail upon the legislature, and rightly so, that you have one organized borough, therefore the rest of the state should be declared an unorganized borough, and the state legislature should be its governing body. His idea being behind that the people not wanting to be continually burdened with state government legislation would get into the act of forming their own boroughs in the organized area and get away from it. Well, it didn't happen, and it didn't happen for a good many years. I'm glad to see that as Mike put it, they're developing some ideas. Many of the ideas that he is developing, of course, have to be presented to the... Sorry, you have to leave, Ben. Thank
My last comment is that all is not lost. We're still evolving in Alaska. Next 5 years, we'll probably see everything different than it is today.
Probably so.
Thank you, Ben.
But the legislature, I feel, was very, very dilatory, and for the matter, still are, in providing the services for the unorganized part of the state. And Mike is going to have to take all of his ideas, have them drafted into some sort of legislation, ordinances, I should say, present them to the legislature, and hopefully the legislature will start to act on some of these things so that the unorganized section of the borough can come into its own and grow with the rest of the state instead of continuing to be hindered. The one comment that John made that I like very much is the provision that's going to be on the ballot about the dedicated fund. I, for one, cannot understand why we're going to take a great deal of the revenue that we're going to get from the windfall, oil, whatever you want to call it, and solve it away in the permanent fund where there are so many needs within this state that are to be met. What greater legacy can you hand the people or the children? For instance, if you take that money, and the state at the moment has something over $500 million worth of bonded indebtedness and is attempting to incur something in excess, I believe, of $50 or $60 or $100 million more at this legislature. What greater legacy can you give anybody if you take the revenue and just pay off those bonds? You're talking something close to $50 million in interest a year. What greater legacy can you provide the people in the urban, and particularly in the suburban areas, if you take some of that money and you help them meet some of the needs that they want? They, for instance, again, the Native leaders complain and rightly so, that the children leave the villages and they never return. Well, why do they? There's nothing to return to. You're not going to make every Native village in the state a metropolis, but there are a few that with some help could be upgraded so that the people won't all leave and leave vast areas of the state without anybody. This has been going on for a good many years. So, with that in in mind, I think that I'll comment again that I feel in my own mind that the local government article has served pretty well. I think that maybe if we had to do it again, there would be some changes, but I would venture not doing that.
Thank you.
I just wanted to comment that I just wish all the other things that I have been involved in time to time over interpretation of the local government and the local relationship had a few conflicts in the
Bill, for the benefit of the students, I hear you might mention your affiliation, which I think might make your comments.
I'm with an ag industry. I'm like the director. I have occasion to work with state local officials in different states. Some of them have new local government divisions. And I must say that notwithstanding some of the problems that you've indicated, and I think that obviously there are things that need to be worked out, I think that the whole extraordinarily well, and that it's involved in a fashion in doing things, but and not necessarily anticipated by the committee, but I think the flexibility within the system is very, very important. And I think that one of the comments that I would like to make is the very fact that you have been able to do things and have moved in directions that weren't necessarily succeeding is probably a high compliment. Rather than having been so wise that you wrote into it all of the qualifications and clarifications I think even though at the time they may have felt well they're probably John, but it made it even more obvious.
Mr. McNeese?
Mr. Chairman, if I may take this minute, I served on the executive committee and was quite active on the floor. I lived in a small community, 2,000 people. In a rural area representative at that time, the Northwestern District legislative wise. But I do remember a great discussion with Jim over college, too, I'm sure, about the intercontractual relationship that exists. The section that is here on home rule power to permit any service that either the city needed or the outer area could supply. The outer area of the city can supply, or the state can supply. Any strata government that supply these functions on a contractual basis, I think that's something to overlook.
Sure.
If I may, I know that is potentially it was a very well meaning article, but the cities and the boroughs would rather fight it.
That's right.
So, that's the reason why this narrative was used that implemented that month.
Yes, Mayor?
I just wanted to comment on what Jim spoke about regarding people from the villages leaving and not returning. And I recall Dr. Scarlin, who was an anthropology professor here at the university, his argument was that if you can educate them locally, they will be more apt to remain and be in service locally. And I think you recall when most of the students were taken down to Mount Edgecombe, I'm thinking of the Native students and other places. Now, those institutions did what they could under the federal system, but I'm really happy to come back and see how many schools we do have out in the rural areas, the high schools and such, that have been made possible through the state government. And had Alaska not become a state, I think this would not be the case. And I understand, and I'll be finding out when I get to visit out west now this coming week, that there are many, many of the young people that have returned, not only after having completed high school either locally, but after completing college, they're back as pilots, nurses, fully qualified school teachers. The jobs are there and they are returning. I think as Alaska develops, you're going to find that them having been trained and they'll be back and they'll compete with anybody for the good jobs that you'll find out in the rural areas. And this, I'm very, very happy. Now, it's a long process, but it's coming. You have a comment on that?
Yes, I'd like to make a comment to that. I haven't really intended to, but I think that it's pertinent enough to say. It's always,
Mr. Hipper?
Yeah, Mark Hipper,
ICR. It struck me, and it's always struck me, as one of the weakest conceivable arguments for providing services to people that's going to help them stay in some high quality.